Can I get David Destrol to? Hello, David. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. It's rainy here in North Carolina as well. So.
Oh, okay. So similar weather.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, today we're going to talk about language server protocol in .NET 5.
Yep.
So I will let you take it away.
Cool. So today I'm going to be talking about the language server protocol in .NET 5. The back history of why I'm talking about this and everything else is the OmniShare project. So that was sort of my entry into the open source space. And the language server protocol in VS Code sort of evolved from their workings of TypeScript and the C# servers that they were interacting with to build their IntelliSense. The way I like to look at OmniSharp and the language server protocol really is it's whatever language you want in a box. So OmniSharp is C# in a box, more or less like you put Visual Studio in a place and put an API around it. Originally it was an HTTP server. Today it uses what we call standard input and standard output. I like to call it the poor man's socket because you're dealing with the console in, console out. But there's other options there as well, named pipes and sockets and so on. Today, VS Code uses standard input output. We're slowly moving towards getting that to language server protocol. That's sort of my goal to get it there. We get a bunch of wins from that. It does support language server protocol today. It supports both the what we call the OmniShare protocol and language server for other editors. And those other editors are things like Vim, Emacs, anything else that you'd want to be able to consume OmniSharp with. I remember building a language server protocol for Eclipse Shay, which was .NET running. It was like I can't remember the name of the system. It's one of the new Eclipse versions. So it was running Java, but it was using language server protocol to talk to OmniSharp. So what is the language server protocol? It's very similar, as I was saying earlier, it's an evolution of those servers. It can be written in any language because you just have to deal with whatever the protocol is. You're only dealing with consumers and producers of that data. But the real value is I can write my language server once, and then it can work in VS Code, Visual Studio, Atom, Emacs, Vim, IntelliJ, right? All these other different editors. So it opens up the avenue for anyone to be able to use your language and use your code. And this doesn't necessarily need to be like C# or VB or any of the standard .NET languages. You may even have a custom DSL that you've built for your company. And maybe that using something like this, you can give other developers or even consumers a better experience. And one of the nice things that the protocol has is progressive enhancement. And in the web, we have progressive enhancement in terms of where, that button has a hover because the browser supports hover. It's a very similar sort of aspect. So if your language server protocol implements completions or IntelliSense, as we're used to calling it, then as long as the client supports it, anyone can then get IntelliSense. But if they don't support those items, then it just doesn't do anything. And that's okay because the client only supports what it needs to support. So part of this process, I've sat down and worked on creating a C# library that is as close that is that implements the protocol, but tries to bring it into the C# way of doing things. Right, .NET we have the at least with .NET Core we have Microsoft extensions for logging, configuration, options, all those kind of things, dependency injection. So adopting those principles, creating a library that can feel very much like just building any kind of .NET application today or a .NET console app allows us to do that. As well as we have internally built up a client. I like to say it's not really a client, but it implements the client protocol, which is great because now you can create unit tests that are integration tests, very similar to how ASP.NET Core has a test server. So you can actually create a test client that executes your server and does the behaviors that you're expecting. You could create your own IDE. Not really recommending that. But the goal is the library does all of the heavy lifting for you. You don't have to worry about doing too much. It's also extensible. So Language Server Protocol does define extension points. And so we also support, you know, being able to do whatever you need to do within your server. Obviously, if you extend the server and do a special bunch of special things, unless the client understands what that special thing is, they're not going to be able to see it. But that's okay. You could have better experience in your VS Code extension, but someone could still pick it up and use it in Emacs if they felt like it. You can also override the handlers as well. So we're doing that. We also have lifecycle hooks. So if the library is doing something that you don't want, or you want to override the behavior, so you can also do that as well. So we got integrations. As I was saying, you can do the integration testing, which is really great because you can validate a server or a client if you're building an IDE. And you can also do in-process and out-of-process testing. And so as I was saying, Microsoft extensions, you can inject a logger into your handler. And then what it'll do is it'll pipe those logs over the Language Server Protocol's log method. And then they show up in Visual Studio or in Visual Studio Code or however the editor has it. Configuration is the same way. If you're new to .NET Core, iConfiguration is the new way of configuring your data over Configuration Manager. And so the protocol defines configuration on the client that can be provided to the user. And I'll sort of go over this in my demo here in just a moment, as well as strongly typed options. So being able to take that configuration and transform it into something that's useful for you as a .NET developer to consume. And I was talking about configuring the configuration. So one other point is just consumers. So OmniSharp Roslyn is as well. But actually the library's been adopted by several Microsoft teams. The PowerShell extension has replaced their custom language server protocol with C# language server protocol, which is cool. And so I'm supporting those guys as well. Azure's new Project Bicep, which I think there was a couple talks on earlier in the week, is also making use of it for their editor IntelliSense and Razor language server as well. So that one's actually shipping in Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code. And so that language server is actually based off of our basic pieces. And so I guess we will now jump over to the demo. All right. And so I just have some source code here. I've built most of it just because I don't know if I could live code this in enough time to sort of stay within the bounds of this talk. But basically, we're just a .NET program. And I just have, you know, console logs in here just for my sanity when I'm checking things, make sure it works. But in reality, it's just calling language server from, and we configure our server. And the configure server part is the part that's interesting. So your input and your output, these methods, doing the wrong thing, take both a stream or a pipe. Pipe is the new intrinsic in .NET 3.1 or 2. I can't remember what version it came in. That's very similar to a stream. We support bringing in using the pipe reader or just a stream. As long as there's an input stream or output stream, it doesn't matter where that comes from, it can come in the library. So we sort of dictate for consumers of the library itself that you need to figure out what is your transport going to be. Could be WebSockets, could be doing stuff in the browser. There's some really interesting stuff going on there. Don't have a demo of that today, but there's been a bunch of cool stuff, especially you look at GitHub code spaces. We got our configure logging. So we're just going to add our language server protocol logging to that, configure our services, and we'll come back to this in just a moment. And then what configuration sections we want. This is how the configuration section or the configuration system is configured. And so we're just going to go to our code over here. So I have it running as an extension host in VS Code, just for demo purposes. As I was talking about logging, we can go here and you can actually see this is log. I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but these are logs coming from the server. So it was processing a configuration request. So this is just for diagnostic information. I have the logging turned up to 10. So we'll get that out of the way. So right now, you can see when I'm making a server for INI or NIN protocols. I mean, I'm not a huge Nine Inch Nails fan, but I figured it was appropriate just to pick something fun. And right now, nothing's going on. We got like the standard VS Code experience. There's no hover or anything like that. So let's try to fix that a little bit. So first steps first, and I'm trying to actually type on the other window on the other screen, which is not actually useful, is the text document store. So this is where the heavy lifting comes in, and this is sort of outside of the scope of the language server protocol, and that's actually parsing the content and producing meaningful data about it. If you have like a DSL that you built today, you might already have some of these things in place for parsing and finding out what tokens are, you know, all those kind of things that you would expect. And when I talk about these things, if I'm talking over your head, don't worry about it. I'm not really too into the huge parser stuff. I'm not a traditional .NET parsing programmer or a computer scientist, but just talking through the pieces. So this just implements the part of the protocol that's like, oh, I've opened a document, I've changed a document, those kind of text changes coming through. The real hard stuff is in the parser. So it's very trivial. This stuff is on GitHub. Feel free to take a look at it. But this is just going through to find, you know, things like comments and where section headers start. And we're actually doing diagnostics. So if the section hasn't closed, we'll say, you know, the key is not complete. And we'll sort of show that here in the editor in a moment. If you have a key without a value, or if you have a duplicate key, for example, so, you know, these are the kind of things you might want to have pop up. And these don't have to necessarily be done in line with the parser. This was just a convenience thing. So we'll come back here, we'll save the store, and we'll go back here. So in just a moment, as it restarts, now we've got a couple things. We got this little info, which is remove leading white space, and we have this thing about there's a duplicate key. So I could duplicate that a bunch, and we're still going to get diagnostics. And we go down to VS Code. And it's going to show us, you know, duplicate key, and I can lower this down. You can click on it, and it takes you there. And that's all just VS Code knows how to do the protocol. The protocol just says, here's the information. And then the client puts it in whatever place is native for the editor. So we'll take those codes out. That gives us some extra data there. And now, you know, well, what if I wanted to fix this? All right, there's no code actions. Or anything like that right now, but what if there were? And we'll take a look at the implementation as provider here real quick, because it's really not super complicated. So the protocol defines registration options, and you basically have to tell the client, what are the things I support? Do I support resolving extra data? What's the document I'm working with? And one nice thing about the protocol, the library that I've built up, is that it'll actually do the routing of requests for you properly. So if you support, say, for C#, right, you got CS proj files and you have CS files, which is this something we still need to add OmniSharp. But if you have both, you can actually add a completion handler for CS files and another completion handler for CS proj files. And you can actually split your logic up so you can just be like, ah, this is just completions for what I need to do in a project file versus, you know, this is completions for C# itself. Supported code actions and stuff. So in here, we're going to go reach out to our store. And so we got full dependency injection. So you get we injected our text document store right into here. It could be interfaces or other classes. It was just convenience. So we try to get our document. If we don't get a document, then we don't have any IntelliSense. And then we try to find an item at that position. This is just stuff I've built up. This document is an IN document. And then we check to see if there's white space within the value, right? And if there's white space within the value, we will add that code action. So we'll go in here, we'll make that quick save, and we wait for the server to restart. We'll come back to the output. You see it has restarted at this point. And so now we have our little light bulbs. You can do control dot, or you can click on the light bulb there, and it takes the value out. And we can undo that and leave it back in. And Next is, so this one is not supported in VS Code natively yet. Or it's supported in VS Code, but it's what they call proposed features. So the protocol is going through the next version. So this is for the next version, but it's cool to add. It's cool to show and cool to add. And so let's actually go take a look at the token provider. So I'm not going to go into the details of tokenization. There's some really interesting logic and math in terms of how they want to transport this data. Because if you're, this is for tokenizing the document and showing meaningful stuff. So if you're using Visual Studio or even VS Code now, you can, if you have an interface or an enum, they might show up different than a class in terms of the color of the class name and stuff. And so that's what's called semantic tokens or semantic model. So you get that extra meaning. And so this handler just goes through and does the semantic modeling that you're expecting, or the semantic tokenization. And this can be however you want to do it. And then the library will make sure to transport the minimum amount of data possible. If you want to yourself create it so that it can do the minimum amount of tokenization possible based on the recent changes, there's more stuff you have to dive into. But the interesting part is now we have some different colors. And you know, we can do whatever kind of text we want. And in this model, the first five characters or so actually sort of dictates the color. So that's just the way that it tokenizes it here. But one interesting thing is if you used ASP.NET Core or .NET Core, there's this options monitor here that I've injected for my INI configuration. So we can actually go out here to options monitor, and it has a current value. It's got this unchanged thing. And so what does that mean for me as a consumer? Well, it means we've taken the configuration from the client and we've bound it to the server, but using the .NET pieces. So you don't have to worry about managing the configuration and parsing the JSON and all that kind of stuff. You just have to interact with this options monitor. And so what we've done here is we store the current state. And so we're going to do a rainbow tokenization. So we're just going to do a random tokenization, essentially. And so whenever the state swaps, we're going to send this request to the server, or it's from the server to the client. And the client understands this as being a refresh perhaps. And this, if you just hover over this for a moment, it says it's obsolete, but it's just because it's a proposed feature. So we mark it with that so that you know not to use it if you're doing something that's going to production potentially. And so this tells the client to just go retokenize and get the tokens back and render those back. So what I can actually do is in VS Code, you have your settings JSON. And so I just have it open here to the side, which is why it's been there this whole time. And so if I save that, now it's gone to this more sort of rainbow effect where each item is getting a different token potentially, just based on it's the next token in line. So I mean, I can duplicate that, and now it's going to be more rainbows everywhere. Who doesn't like rainbows? I did the same thing. I can turn that off. And the server has done all of the processing for dealing with the change of coming through for you. It's just said, here you go. Now, I mean, it wouldn't really be a useful server without something like completion, right? So let's turn completion, and we'll turn hover on as well. So I can take some questions here in a moment. So we'll come through, we'll take a look. Server's restarted. And so now I can come in here and I've got some great values. I'm using a fun little library called Bogus. It's more for unit testing, but it lets you generate random data. And so in this case, I'm just using it to generate random data based on the key. So it's consistent within the value of the key. And so I can pick that up from IntelliSense. And now I also have hover, so it tells me what the key is, what the value is, what the section it's from is. I go to the section. But now we can sort of bump it up a little bit. We got code bins. We'll do that. And so when this loads up, you should see it pop up fairly soon. All right. And so now the code lens is telling us you got three values here, you got five values here. All right. If I go duplicate this and I add another value there, it says, oh, you got four. And I just went to search because I'm smart. I do the same thing here. And so on and so on. So now you have have CodeLens. Now, I'm not demoing that CodeLens can actually link off to things, but CodeLens can do like find references. So you get to list all the references, and there's a way to actually present the references to the user. I didn't dive into that for this. And then let's just do the other ones. So we got folding range, and we got outline. Actually, we'll do folding range in a second. And so that starts up. So now, actually, if you look over here on the side of VS Code, I'll close this so we can get some more looking at it. We've now implemented the outline provider, the outline document symbol provider. And so this gives you the ability to say, well, what are the symbols in this document? And so we'll come back here and you can see here's the keys, the values, all that stuff. So VS Code knows how to present this, so it just presents it. As long as it's implemented. If it's not implemented, it doesn't do anything. Another nice thing is this server supports the ability to use NIN files. Again, just to keep up with that theme, this doesn't have the INI text parsing turned on, but because we have the semantic tokens, it still does tokenize some stuff, which is quite nice. And then we'll do the final two. So I'll turn on folding range while that starts up. Then VS Code has this idea of what they call selection range, which Visual has too. Some ReSharper and other products do as well. But basically, you can actually inform the editor of what values it should expand to. So by default, it will do the current word. But then the next will be like, oh, I'm going to do the whole item. And there's actually a bug in here. You can see where it's actually not covering the E. I just didn't fix that. So how I have it set up is it's going to do highlight the whole value, and then it's going to highlight the value with the key, and then it's going to highlight the entire section. And it doesn't really matter where you do it. If I'm in the middle here, it'll still highlight that whole key, and then it'll highlight the entire section as well. And then finally, the folding. All right, so now we have code folding here. So I told it where I want the folds to be. Want them to be on a section, so it'll fold that for you. And then finally, we're going to actually just close this. And this all ports over to Visual Studio as well. So I'm just going to start up my Visual Studio extension real quick. And Visual Studio doesn't support all the features, or there are some bugs in my implementation, to be fair. I'll pull it over here as soon as it starts up. So this is an extension using a language server protocol in Visual Studio. So I already have the folder open. I'm just going to open that same sample folder we were just working with. Sorry, emergency alert going off in my house. It's raining out. I apologize. There's nothing we can do. I'll give this a moment to finish loading. Hopefully my computer, it's Visual Studio. We all love it. We all know it's Visual Studio. You can do it. I guess it got scared by the emergency alert. All right, so now it doesn't do the semantic tokens, but we do get the folding. We do get things like IntelliSense. So all those things are there. And now I guess I'm ready for questions. Oh, I can do one more thing with my slides actually really quick. So I'll present that. One other thing is there's a debug adapter protocol Visual Studio Code implements. We've built this up for the PowerShell team, as well as any additional links that you may or may not have. So link to the repository. Documentation is still something that I really need to work on, so I've been doing that. And then the two specification documents are there as well. So, all right. Are there any questions? There's Jamie.
Hey, David. Excellent session. That was amazing. I loved all of the singletons and all of those animations. The bot animations were really great. So we have one question that I'd like to bring up. So from Bitbunk, does the Visual Studio Classic use C# LSP for the C# code editor?
It does not. So the C# editor in Visual Studio is, you know, custom homebrewed thing that's been in, not homebrewed, but it's the same thing that's been in Visual Studio for years.
Okay, so nothing new.
Yeah.
And then we have one other question from Coder Goblin. Great talk. I agree. Is there a way that they can get a list of the shortcuts you are using in VS Code?
That's always a great question. I have a few custom ones. My keybinds. I can't remember what it is.
Well, maybe we could share a few of those out on Twitter.
I can certainly do that. I can put some out. I mean, I have some that have sort of fallen over for over time. So this one actually came from Adam, control \, you know, those kind of things. I've customized it a little bit. So it's more like a mash of Adam, Visual Studio, and VS Code. So that's just how I've been doing things. I tried to make sure that at least the code binds are showing up in VS Code so people can see I was actually doing things.
It's a real demo, people.
Yeah.
Well, amazing. I think that might have been all of the questions that we have.
No problem.
But thank you so much for joining us here today. I'm glad that there was no emergency that happened and that we move forward. Thank you so much, David, for your time. Thanks, everybody who joined us here. Let's go ahead and go to a video before we switch over to our next presenter.
Thank you. Have a great day.